And what we're seeing here at the border, the migration flow, increased migration flow, certainly it ebbs and flows. And we're at a time of the year where we're seeing more at the border. And it's not unusual. This is an immigration system that has been broken for decades. And the president has taken this very seriously to try to do more. And what we're seeing here.
Immigration system. If you notice what she just said, Karine Jean-Pierre, immigration system, not the border, the immigration system. Welcome to the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana today on a Friday. Happy Friday. We're almost to Christmas. Hard to believe, right? I know. It just feels like it snuck up on us. So there's two issues here going on. The first issue, of course, is that the border, which, of course, is the border of the United States of America, is wide open, and there's an invasion going on at that southern border, and we have surrendered that border. Then there's an immigration system, which deals with immigration. These are two entirely separate things. The border is not part of the immigration system. The border is supposed to be security for the United States of America. There are ports of entry that are part of the immigration system. Those are legal ports of entry. That's not what we're talking about, though. We're not talking about people in traffic trying to cross over a bridge between the U.S. and Canada and going through border patrol and customs. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about the southern border of the United States and the fact that it is completely open, and that we have every day over 10,000 illegal immigrants crossing into that border. But if you notice the language the left uses, the left loves playing word games. They really do. They're so good at this. They don't address the actual thing that's happening. They use these fun phrases like immigration system is broken. Now, the immigration system deals with the immigration courts. It deals with asylum paperwork. It deals with family paperwork. That's all the system. The border is a national security issue. That's totally different. What happens at a port of entry, whether it's an airport or whether it is at the border, that's part of the immigration system. Again, we're not talking about that. We're not saying, hey, how can we streamline the crossing at Juarez because the traffic is just too bad. We're not talking about that. What we're saying is, how do you secure this border, and why won't you? Because it's a national security imperative. Right now, Republicans are arguing about trying to get border security in with funding for Ukraine and Israel. And it's a losing battle. And I'll tell you the reason why. Because the Democrats keep turning around and saying that the immigration system is broken. What the Democrats will do is they'll come up with something to allow the language to change around asylum seekers. They'll parse some language and they'll do a couple definition changes here and there just to give the Republicans enough cover to go back to their districts and say, hey, look what I did. I got border security done. No, you didn't. You were able to get some words changed in terms of definitions regarding asylum and whatnot. And then that'll be rejected by the courts anyway, or just completely not enforced by the Biden administration. What Republicans need to do is say, we're not giving you a dime for Ukraine, not a nickel, not a penny, until you close the border, until you close the border. But they won't do that. They're not going to do that because you have a lot of Republicans there who are all in on Ukraine funding, and they want to see Ukraine get as much as they want. They're just looking for a little cover because they know it's not super popular back in their district with hardcore Republican voters. But that's the truth. I mean, that's what's happening. So normal people, conservatives, libertarians, centrist minded, if you can even realize I'm only talking about a handful, Democrats on the issue, not saying they're centrist minded, but on the issue, at least they are, like John Fetterman. Now, suddenly his great rebirth, great reawakening. They understand that the border is separate from the immigration system. The White House uses fun word games because they don't want to deal with the border situation. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre, unable to articulate a single policy the Biden administration would support to secure the southern border. This is going to be cut number 7, Steve. Not a single policy the Biden administration would support to secure the southern border. Take a listen.
I understand you don't want to negotiate from the podium, but can you tell the American people if there's any immigration policy that this White House is willing to talk about and is working on with Republicans?
So I want to be really careful as negotiations happen. We don't want to do this in the public, right? It does not help the process. And so we want to make sure that those negotiations are happening. Obviously, we're part of those negotiations with the senators. We think it's going in the right direction. We want to make sure that we get to a bipartisan agreement. It's incredibly important. The president understands. He understands that we have to fix this immigration system. It has been broken for decades now. And so we have to do everything that we can to fix that system. And so we're going to have those conversations. And you're right, it's not just about funding. It's also about policy discussions that they're having. And so don't want to get ahead of it. And let's not forget, this is a president that has had these types of negotiation or been part of these types of, his team certainly has been part of these types of negotiations for some in different subjects. And
What? Not a single policy. Not a single policy when it comes to securing the southern border. All you hear is this is the immigration system is broken. Well, I just explained to you how the immigration system is separate from the border. Not ports of entry, which you have at the border, but the border, which is a national security issue. The southern border, where people cross illegally into the country, is not an immigration system issue. That's a homeland security, national security issue. Two separate things. But again, the White House is trying to conflate them all together to confuse you and distract you with lots of fun word games. They figure if they just throw lots of words at you, you just go, and you'll just forget what you asked. It's a strategy. Strategy. It really is. They throw lots of words at you. Eventually, you'll just lose your train of thought will go away and you'll forget what you were even discussing. You'll forget the question that you were asked and you go, I know it's a big problem. It's a major issue, but we are here because the Democrats are very happy with the border being open. They're very happy with the border being open. And they don't want to change that. They do not want to change that. So they're going to keep distracting you about the immigration system. I will tell you that it's infuriating that we watch this and you've got people like John Fetterman coming out and saying the immigration system is not what we're talking about. It's the border, stupid. It's the border, stupid. This is really playing into the Republican hands, though. It really is. I mean, it's playing right into Republican hands. John Kirby, the Pentagon spokesperson, came out and said, we basically said here now, we're unable to articulate, let's see if I can find the, I'm sorry, the right cut. We've done a good job to try to get the root causes of immigration. The root causes of immigration, cut 10.
Cecil, would you say the administration's efforts to stem root flow, to get to the root causes of migration have been?
We believe that we've done a good job working with our partners in the region to try to get at some of the root causes, including political instability and crime. There is more that needs to be done. And I think it's important, again, as I said earlier, to keep this in perspective. You are seeing more people on the move for a variety of reasons across in this hemisphere than since World War II. I mean, it's a historic level of migration, and there's a lot of reasons for it, and we're not the only country that's facing this flow. So it's back to the question about alliances and partnerships. A way to get at this is to work with neighboring nations to try to get at these root causes at the same time. Working on our own immigration process here in the policies here in the country and getting at reform, as well as working on border security. And that's why the president asked for $6 billion in the summer.
Yeah, it's the root causes. And by the way, one of those major causes, of course, is climate change, just so you know. I mean, obviously, climate change is a huge issue. See how funny these people are, right? I mean, they're so funny. They love to come up with excuses, but not to address the fact that the border's open. Who cares what the reason is why people are coming to this country illegally? No one cares. It doesn't matter what motivates somebody to come to this country illegally. It could be the fact that there's wars and famine and there's food shortages and there's climate change and all this other thing. All we care about is, can you please secure the border so that when they want to come here, they can't get in? That's it. That's all we're asking. I understand there's lots of different reasons for people to do all kinds of different things in life. But if he's like, it's sitting here having a conversation with your children and saying, well, what are you going to do about the fact that your son, went into school and threw firecrackers in the school? Well, the root causes of my son doing this are blah, blah, blah. No. How are you going to deal with the situation? How are you going to discipline your child? How are you going to make sure this doesn't happen again? The causes that led to him doing this are not really my concern. I want to make sure this doesn't happen again. But this is what we're dealing with, the White House. Why does it matter? Why does it matter if there's a flow of illegal immigration? If the border was secure, that would be a huge deterrent. How about this for being one of the reasons why there's a huge demand or a huge influx of illegal immigration? Because the border's open. I mean, call me crazy, but if you forget to lock the doors of a mall and people go in there and steal stuff, you might go, well, I mean, the root causes of them coming in and stealing things might be the fact that they don't have any money, they don't like to pay for things, they needed a new TV, they needed a new... Yeah, or it could be that you just didn't lock the freaking doors and they knew that it was wide open. So they went in there and they just took stuff. So stop playing games of trying to understand what motivates people to cross the border illegally and just close it. Just shut it down, and then it doesn't matter what motivates them to come. And you can't fix everything in life, so you can't fix all the root causes of what's making people want to make this treacherous journey and cross into the United States of America. But I think a big part of what motivates them is the fact that it's open, that they can come in. I think that's a big part of what motivates them. Call me crazy. Here's more of Kirby right now on the flow of migration to the United States of America. Cut number 11.
There was a general decline in some of the migrant flows. Again, not perfect, not saying that it was down to a level that was comfortable for anybody, but there had been a decline. And so we want to see that same effort being applied again as a team going forward, and we'll see where that goes. But we're working on this really, really hard.
What? I mean, again, it doesn't matter if the flow is down. If the border was secure, the flow would be irrelevant. It'd be irrelevant. Right now we have, I think they said it was 200 migrants for every Border Patrol agent down there working the border at this very moment. 200 illegal immigrants for every one. I mean, that's probably, that number's got to be low, I think. Really has to be low. And then a reporter asked John Kirby about illegal border crossers and what's happening to them. Cut 12.
Some illegal border crossers are being given court dates in 2031. What are they supposed to do here for 7 years?
Again, that's a better question put to the DHS. I'm not in a position to talk about specific cases like that.
That's a better question for them. But mostly what they're going to do is just kind of hang out and disappear. Then not show up for court in 2031. So, and by then they'll probably have asylum anyway. If we get reelected, they'll have asylum. They'll probably be citizens. They'll probably be voting by then. Many of them will be in Congress by then. So it's hard to say, hard to speculate. Imagine that you get a court date for 2031. It's the year 2023. All right, I'll round up. It's 2024. So 7 years now. You're just going to hang out. 7 years. Just gonna hang out and chill. Oh yeah, that's great. That's really great. I mean, as opposed to saying you have to remain in Mexico, you can't stay here. Sorry, folks. Moose out front should have told you. Park's closed. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Oh, so you got to go back there and then wait for your time to go to court. This is a scam. This is a scam. And then everybody comes here, and then they're able to come here because the border's open. And then they don't have to leave, and they're told, you better show up for that court date in 7 years or else. Or else what, exactly? What are you going to do? You're not going to be able to find me. I'm about to disappear into the United States of America and mix in with 320 million people. How are you going to find me? What are you putting, a tracking beacon on me? I'll take it off. You're going to implant a chip under my skin? I'll get somebody to carve it out. What are you going to do? It really is a joke. I mean, I guess these people just completely insult our intelligence. I guess that's really what it comes down to. All right, this is the Dana Show. We got a lot to talk about here on a Friday afternoon. As you can imagine, there's more on Trump in Colorado, other states now looking to get in on the action of taking him off the ballot, and bad polling news for Governor Ron DeSantis. Don't go away.
We have more on the way as we roll towards headlines. Our partners over at Nimi Skincare, this makes a great Christmas gift if you're looking for gift ideas. They have all kinds of gifting options that include their limited edition winter bundle and all kinds of gift cards. Now, if you're looking for a simple skin routine skincare routine that's effective and also affordable. And they're not going to try to have a dude out there selling you women's products because you're obviously your skincare needs are different. You need to check out Niemi Skincare. You can save 10% using code Dana, first off. Secondly, this is high-end skincare. That is affordable. And they also use only the best ingredients. They don't use parabens or any of the other chemicals that work that cause people to break out or have other skin issues. They don't test on animals. And they were founded by people who understand that men, you know, as much as we love you, you're not going to sell skincare stuff to women because we have different needs. And they're not going to do all that stuff. They have very easy to follow routines. They're packed with proven ingredients that repair and revitalize the skin. And that's what's important. You want to use the products of companies that have the same values that you do, but you also want to use, you know, products that actually work and are crafted really well. And that's what Niemi Skincare's products do. The Hydrate Protect Ultimate routine is great. The cleanser I use, I love the cleanser. And I say this as somebody that deals with like eczema and all that. So I got to be really careful with what I use and incorporate things slowly. And so far, I love their stuff. It doesn't aggravate the skin. It doesn't inflame your skin because there's no perfumes and all that stuff added to it. Made right here in the US of A, and their stuff is 100% guaranteed. So with Niemi Skincare, you're not compromising your values to have great skin. Visit NiemiSkincare.com, N-I-M-I, skincare.com. Use promo code Dana for 10% off.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
All right, it is the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, from Dana's affiliate in Philadelphia, Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, where I do the afternoon drive show. We got a lot to talk about today, but I got five things for you. Let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, let's start with this. Hollywood has had a bad year. Oof, it's been bad. Hollywood's rocky year, according to Variety. Strikes, box office bombs, and huge leadership vacuum. Hollywood says goodbye to the worst year in a generation. Which leads to another story that Warner Brothers and Discovery are in merger talks with Paramount Global and may draw out NBC Universal. I mean, there's so many streaming options out there that it's inevitable they're all going to kind of merge at some point. That may be happening now. I guess the reason is a lot of us just think that Hollywood's putting out a bunch of crap, you know, a bunch of remakes and nothing really good. But I remember when James Bond movies were good, a James Bond-style $380,000 C-car has been unveiled as it reaches speeds of up to 62 miles an hour and glides across the coastline. It's in Europe, of course, which reminds me, when are we getting flying cars? And speaking of Europe, a 2,300-year-old mosaic made of shells and coral has been found buried under the streets of Rome. That's right, buried under the streets of Roma. As you can imagine, that's going to be worth a lot of money someday. And speaking of money, California, the world's first fully autonomous artificial intelligence-powered restaurant, is set to open in Southern California. It'll be great for jobs, because there won't be any jobs. This is the Dana Show. We have a lot to talk about. Don't go away.
Looking for a proactive solution in a battle against COVID-19? Well, ivermectin is now available at All Family Pharmacy, based in Boca Raton, Florida. With a growing interest in its potential benefits, ivermectin has emerged at the forefront for its antiviral properties. Supported by robust research and real-world experiences, it has gained new attention as a possible ally in managing the impact of the virus. For reliable information and access to quality products like ivermectin, visit allfamilypharma.com/Dana and save 10% with promo code Dana10. Your health matters, so stay informed. Visit allfamilypharma.com/Dana. Navigate these challenging times with informed choices and proactive steps. All Family Pharmacy is U.S.-based and safe. Embrace the possibilities with ivermectin. Save 10% with code Dana10 when you place your order now at allfamilypharma.com/Dana. That's allfamilypharma.com/Dana, code Dana10. That's Dana and the number 10.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
So New York, the next state to now look to bar Donald Trump from being on the ballot. Oh, yes, they are looking to do exactly what California is looking to do and what Maine is looking to do and, of course, what Colorado thinks it has done. Welcome back to The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, with you this afternoon. I'll be back with you on January 2nd. Hope you have a very Merry Christmas with your family, and I hope you have a wonderful New Year, and I look forward to being back with you next year. That's the thing, right? Colorado's decision here, which is still getting a lot of blowback by people who understand the law, because mainly Donald Trump did not have any due process. I was thinking about the notion of due process and how Chief Justice John Roberts could resolve all this if he wanted to. I was thinking about this. John Roberts, as the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, likes very narrow, tailored rulings. He doesn't like big, sweeping rulings. He likes to be this court, the Roberts Court, as it's known, because usually the court takes the moniker of the Chief Justice's name. The Roberts Court likes to have more narrow rulings when possible. They don't like to have these big, sweeping, landmark decisions. Obviously, they did with overturning abortion, but when possible, they like to just kind of look at the issue at hand and deal with it that way. And they have an opportunity to do that here. They don't even have to get into the whole disqualification clause of the 14th Amendment, which would be a very big to do. I think it's easy. I think you just look at it and say the word president's not there. In the original draft, it was. They took it out. Therefore, the intent of the people that wrote the amendment and the people that ratified the amendment, adopted the amendment, was to not have president included. But you could actually save everybody from that. All you have to do, if you're the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, all you got to do is get the court to agree that Donald Trump was acquitted by Congress. The only time this case was ever adjudicated was during the impeachment of Donald Trump in January of 2021. So all you have to do, very simple, is just say this court does not have the authority to overrule Congress. Congress made their determination that Donald Trump was not guilty. The Constitution requires under the impeachment clause a 2/3 vote. They only had 57. Therefore, he's acquitted. It doesn't matter. You know, it's just 12 angry men. All you need is one person, one juror. In this case, you need 60 to convict, to remove the president from office. So they didn't get it. And it doesn't matter how close you were. It doesn't matter if you had 11 jurors thinking the guy's guilty. One thinks he's not guilty. Then the guy walks. It's how it works. It's our system, period. The numbers are the numbers. So the court could come out and say, look, we as the United States Supreme Court, we don't have the ability to override the judgment of Congress. Congress has the impeachment power under the Constitution, not us. Chief Justice John Roberts presided over it. So he was there and he can attest to the fact that everything was done by the book. But there's no appeal process in an impeachment. It's not like if they vote to remove you in the Senate, the former president can then go into the Supreme Court and say, hey, can you hear my appeal? No, you're done. That's it. Congress is the absolute authority on these matters. So knowing that that's the absolute authority in the Constitution, all the Supreme Court has to do is come back and say, listen, whether we agree or disagree with the finding of Congress is not for us. This branch does not play a role in that branch. That branch has the sole power to impeach the president and then try him in the Senate. And if there's a conviction, he's removed and then he's barred from being eligible to run for office ever again. The end. But that's not what happened. They essentially acquitted him. Therefore, this question is moot. You got to let him on the ballot. And that's it. You don't even have to get into federal court. You don't even have to get into the disqualification clause. You don't have to get into any of those things. You just end it right there and say he was found not guilty. There you go. In fact, you could even embrace the spirit of double jeopardy and say, well, it's not the legal definition of it, because obviously an impeachment is not a court. It's a political court, but it's not a court of law. It has the binding of law, but it's different from a criminal court in that aspect. But still, the concept of double jeopardy, you could say, would still live here. Now, Congress tried this guy. They impeached him, which is a charge. They tried him in the Senate. He had a fair trial, and he was acquitted. So the spirit of our system would be that the founders would not think then, as a private citizen, you could go after the president for the same thing. I mean, just put yourself in the mindset of the framers of the Constitution. Do you think that they would have liked the idea that if you impeach a president, high crime, bribery, high crimes, other misdemeanors, really for abusing the office of the presidency. You impeach the guy, then you have a trial, he's acquitted, but then when he's a private citizen again, you then go after him in criminal court. Do you think the founders would have been okay with that? The framers of the Constitution would have thought that was kosher? No, of course not, because they were acutely aware of double jeopardy. That's why they put in a double jeopardy provision into the Constitution. So you can't be tried twice for the same offense. So no, they would not have approved of that. They would have said that if the president is corrupt, you have to deal with him as president in the capacity of president. And Congress does that in the capacity as Congress. And they did. So the issue now is over. It's resolved. It's a moot point. We don't have to get into the semantics of whether or not the 14th Amendment, Section 3, the disqualification clause includes the president or not. Doesn't matter. The one thing, though, that I think is very clear is that as everybody looks at this case now, they're realizing that what Colorado has done could create absolute chaos in the United States of America. I mean, think about it. You could have states turning around and saying, we just don't believe Biden's eligible to be on the ballot. We for whatever reason, we don't think he's eligible. And you could have half the states keep one guy off. You could have a couple states keep the other guy off. I mean, it could be absolute chaos. And whatever the rule is, obviously, that for the presidency, you got to be 35, not 40, but 35. You got to be born in the United States of America. You have to live here for, I think it's what, 7 years or something. That's it. And if there's a challenge to one of those things, which are all very provable, hey, let's say there's a rumor that a presidential candidate was not born in the United States of America. And a state says, we're not going to put you on our ballot because we don't think you were born in America. Well, there's a process for that. Then the guy can show his birth certificate. You know, if the state says, we don't believe this is a real birth certificate, well, then there's a court. You can appeal that to the courts, and the courts can tell the state, well, go scratch it. You know, we think it's appropriate. We think it's legal, and you got to put them on the ballot. I mean, there's a process for everything. When the Colorado Secretary of State was going on about how she couldn't put Arnold Schwarzenegger on the ballot because Arnold Schwarzenegger was not born in the United States of America. Well, that's true, but Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't pretending that he was born in the United States of America. It's not the better analogy would be I can't put a 30-year-old on the ballot. If I know the guy's 30, I can't put him on the ballot. But if a state has reason to believe that a person's lying about their age, there's a remedy for that. There's a process for that. There's due process for that, in which case then the person can go and prove their age. I don't know, you want to carbon date me? I don't know. How do you want me to prove this to you? Here's my birth certificate. I was born here. I'm 35 years old. Or I'll be 35 by the time of the election. Or the inauguration, whatever the legal standard is. But we're not talking about hypotheticals here where there's not a way to prove it. And there's a way to prove whether or not somebody's been disqualified under the 14th Amendment Section 3, but it ain't Colorado that does it. It ain't Colorado that does it. Colorado doesn't have the ability to make that determination in and of itself. Because, I mean, imagine if a state, imagine if a state said that they were not going to put Barack Obama on the ballot because there were rumors that Barack Obama was actually born in Kenya. And that even though that could not be proven because Obama had a birth certificate that said Hawaii, well, I don't think it's real and we're not going to seat him. We're not going to put him on the ballot in our state. Could you imagine if that had happened? But there's a process by which a candidate can appeal that. There's due process in court, and the court would say to that state, you better put him on the ballot. You can't just take away his liberty here to run without being able to prove this. But that's what Colorado's doing. Colorado's making this determination about Donald Trump all by itself without so much as having gone through the process in the proper venue where that process should take place, which would be federal court, theoretically. But I think, personally, when you look at this, the Supreme Court's way out is just simply to defer to the impeachment of Donald Trump from 2021. Just that's it. That's all I got to say. This court does not have the ability to usurp Congress. And if we did, if we said that what happened in Congress is irrelevant, that the impeachment of a president of the United States of America and the subsequent acquittal of him is irrelevant, we then, as the court, have completely neutered the impeachment clause of the United States Constitution. We've neutered it. It no longer has any value, any worth, any merit. It's gone. It's over. And we can't do that. It'll be a narrow, tailored ruling by the Supreme Court to say we have to defer to Congress on this. And in January of 2021, Congress impeached Donald Trump, and the Senate did not find him guilty. Therefore, who are we to question that? Who are we to do that? And really, the question then becomes, was this ever something that was meant to be adjudicated then in criminal court outside of the processes of Congress? I would argue no. I mean, I would think Donald Trump has a defense. Just if they ever do charge him with anything related to what Congress impeached him over, I think he's got that answer. You just appeal that and say double jeopardy. This violates the spirit of the Constitution. The Constitution wants Congress to be the authority that deals with presidents who they believe have abused their office, and they did. And I've been through this. So now the answer is not to then try me again to see if you can get me in federal court to accomplish what Congress couldn't do. That's literally double jeopardy. That's literally the absolute issue of double jeopardy that we are discussing here. And then you leave the 14th Amendment, Section 3, for another time and another place. And maybe at that point, this will be a wake-up call to Congress, because the 14th Amendment also gives Congress the ability and the authority to legislate around this whole thing. And they never did. So what I think Congress should do after this is all resolved is pass a law that clearly defines what is meant by an insurrection and a rebellion. And clearly define it, how somebody would have to be, to have been determined to have done these things to the United States of America. Don't leave it to chance. Don't leave it to a state to interpret. Don't leave it to a bunch of, to four judges to interpret, when three other judges, all of the same political party, think that the other four got it completely wrong, because you had three justices dissent in Colorado. Don't leave it to chance, and don't leave it to, we'll see what somebody's gut tells them one day, and if it's self-evident. No. The law does not work that way. The law needs to be specific and applied equally. So take the opportunity, once this is all behind you, to pass a law that clearly defines what is meant as an insurrection or rebellion, aid and comfort of those, and how Congress will determine that going forward, so that Congress determines this very clearly. So that a state can't just turn around and do this, because otherwise a state's going to turn around and say, Joe Biden is leading an insurrection at the southern border. Joe Biden's leading a rebellion of the United States of America at the southern border. Joe Biden's giving aid and comfort to those who are invading our country. And he should not be on the ballot, because we have found that he is guilty of undermining the United States of America. And therefore, we're not going to let him be on the ballot. I mean, you could make the same argument right now about Senator Bob Menendez in New Jersey. He's accused of giving help to Egypt, of literally selling out his own country to enrich himself by helping the nation of Egypt. You could argue he's ineligible to be a United States senator for doing all those things. That's basically a rebellion against the United States of America. But he's only been accused of these things. He hasn't been convicted yet. So I wouldn't want to see that. I would want to see his due process play out. But clearly, since you have states that are blue that don't care about due process, Congress needs to define it. But there's your way out for the Supreme Court. Just turn around and say, Congress adjudicated the matter. We don't get the ability to override Congress when it comes to the impeachment clause of the Constitution. The word of Congress is final. They acquitted Donald Trump, for better or for worse. That it is what it is. This issue is put to rest. Colorado, put him on the ballot. It's the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Much of what we see happening around us today results from decades of failure in American education. Americans are increasingly divided over what policies are best for our country. And so that's why I'd like to invite you to make a year-end gift to Hillsdale College and their mission to preserve the blessings of civil and religious liberty through a proper education. Hillsdale College is leading an American revival. Over 3.5 million citizens have enrolled in one or more of Hillsdale's free online courses. Thousands of young Americans are enrolled in over 90 Hillsdale-affiliated K-12 schools, and 6.4 million Americans receive Imprimis 10 times a year. Hillsdale does all of this while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding. Hillsdale's independence means that they rely on the support of citizens like you, who understand the importance of education and liberty. You can make your tax-deductible year-end gift at DanaForHillsdale.com. That's DanaForHillsdale.com. On behalf of our friends at Hillsdale College, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hard to believe Christmas is in a couple days, isn't it? Man, I'll tell you what, I I don't know if I'm ready. The Elf on the Shelf keeps coming back, but the Elf on the Shelf, as I've mentioned to you a few times, has come back from the North Pole a little tipsy and forgot to go to a different spot. You know, he just came back and sat on the same shelf. But of course, the Elf on the Shelf is, as you know, a way to groom the children towards the surveillance state. I really do. I think it's a psyop, psychological operation by the CIA or the NSA. It's hard to say which one, but, you know, you better be good. Santa's watching you. The Elf on the Shelf is watching. And every night he goes back and drops a dime on you, reports back, lets Santa know exactly how you're doing, you know. But the kids love it. They really do. Every morning my 7-year-old runs out to find Fred the Elf. Where's Fred? Where's Fred the Elf? Which is a lot of fun. And then my 9-year-old is sort of at that point now where he doesn't really care where the elf is, but... And the 3-year-old goes crazy trying to grab him. And he can't touch the elf. You know, the elf is... No touching. It's kind of like being at a gentleman's club. I mean, you can only look, you can't touch. A terrible analogy, I know. But anyway, hopefully you got your Christmas shopping done. The fact that Christmas is later this year in terms of the week, because it's Monday. Tomorrow, they're saying it's going to be a huge shopping day. It's going to be a massive shopping day. It's going to be very, very crowded. I'm a procrastinator. I'm a huge procrastinator. I keep waiting and waiting till the last minute. I don't know why. I don't like shopping. I guess because I'm a guy. I don't really like shopping. And so I try to put it off as long as I possibly can until it gets to the point where I go, all right, well, it's either this or I have to find stuff in the house to wrap up and give to my children that they already have. They're like, whoa, you already had that? Oh, how did Santa not know that? And but Dad, it's literally what I was playing with last night. It's the same thing. So you don't want that to happen. So you obviously want to get out there and do something. But there's no doubt the economy is going to be the big issue next year. And the question, of course, that I have as we get ready for 2024, what games the Fed will play with interest rates to try to help Joe Biden, and whether or not consumer confidence is going to go up in 2024. This is what we'll have to watch for as we head into the election year. But no question about it, in my opinion, it is still the economy stupid. I fully believe that. I have no doubts about that fact. And I think that when you listen to Biden talk about Bidenomics more and more right now, they're doing this as a setup because they know the Fed's going to cut interest rates. And they know that the Fed doing so is going to help give a boost to the Biden economy. The whole thing is a scam. We get played all the time on this. But the question is, if you look at people fleeing blue states, does that tell you something about the feeling of the American people in terms of what they want to do and accomplish? We'll talk about that. Hour two of the Dana Show, straight ahead.
So I hope that they do that, and they need to do that. And, you know, Hunter Biden, I mean, it's extraordinary that he thumbed his nose the way he did at Congress. And you can only think that the reason that he did that was because he knows that he has his father's pardon power in his back pocket.
Exactly right, Miranda Devine. Exactly right. Welcome back to the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, with you this afternoon. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it very, very much. Hope you and your family have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I'll be back with you on January 2nd. Records released by House Republicans show that Joe Biden repeatedly emailed Hunter Biden's business associates in 2014. Democrats say the emails were routine and that Hunter Biden's business associate worked as Joe Biden's financial advisor and helped the then vice president file his tax returns. Now, does that not sound like something's rotten in Denmark to you? Like a little bit maybe where you'd want to have kind of a firewall between those sort of activities? That's just the first reading of that, I would think. According to the New York Post, Joe Biden exchanged emails with his son Hunter's business associate 54 times while he was serving as vice president. And some of the messages were sent around the time the elder Biden was traveling to Ukraine and his son was working for a Ukrainian gas company. These are all according to records released by House Republicans. A White House spokesperson declined to comment, of course, but pointed to statements by House Democrats that Hunter Biden's business associate, Eric Schwerin, worked as Joe Biden's financial advisor from 2009 to 2017 and helped him file his tax returns. Schwerin did not respond to requests for comment. The records released describe the dates of the emails and who exchanged them, but do not include the messages themselves. All told, then Vice President Biden emailed Eric Schwerin in 35 times before and after his 2014 trips to Ukraine. Five emails were exchanged just prior to a trip by Vice President Biden to Ukraine on June 7, 2014. 27 emails were sent from the end of June to a second trip to Ukraine by Biden on November 21st, 2014. The bulk of the communication occurred in the lead up and following an appointment for Hunter Biden to serve on the board of the Ukrainian natural gas company Burisma, which, of course, you know, Hunter was so, he had so much free time on his hands, right? I mean, you're spending close to $1 million on escorts and strippers and lap dances and making it rain. You have a lot of time to give your full attention to your client, your consulting expertise. I mean, the guy has no background in natural gas, of course, but he had a lot of time on his hands, except when he wasn't doing cocaine and strippers, which was a lot of time. I mean, that was the bulk of his time, obviously. So maybe it's possible that Burisma wanted Hunter Biden because of his dad. Maybe. That if Hunter's last name was not Biden, if it was something else, Smith or something, Burisma might have passed on giving him $1 million a year. I don't know. Call me crazy. But then again, maybe they just really liked the guy. Maybe he told them great stories about hookers and blow. I mean, who doesn't love a good hookers and blow story? Am I right? Right? The bulk of the communication occurred around the same time that Joe Biden was over there threatening the prosecutor, making sure the prosecutor got fired, and using $1 billion of your taxpayer dollars as the bribe to make sure that the prosecutor, Victor Shokin, got fired, which is what Burisma wanted and why they were paying his idiot crackhead son $1 million a year. Because let's face it, Burisma was not paying Hunter Biden for his skills, his acumen, his attention span, his commitment to detail. They were paying him because of his last name. Earlier this year, Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland said in a news release that Schwerin told House Ways and Means Committee staff in a March interview that the elder Biden was not involved in the business of his son or any of the relatives. But remember what Hunter Biden said. When he came out and gave that speech that day, instead of testifying as he was supposed to do with the congressional subpoena, he said, and I quote, "My father was not financially involved in my business." Financially involved. That's a very broad thing. What does that mean? Maybe he means Joe Biden didn't do the payroll. Maybe he didn't do the benefits enrollment. Maybe Joe Biden didn't handle the, I don't know, Christmas party, the accounting for all that, receipts, expenses, that sort of thing. I mean, that's all financial involvement. So that technically would be a true statement, even though it'd be a material, be really, I mean, you're playing games again, but it could be true. Well, he didn't have financial involvement? That's correct. He did not handle payroll. If somebody had an expense, Joe Biden did not give them the money back. He didn't pay them back. He didn't handle the expenses and the receipts and the P&L cash flow, none of that stuff. He didn't do the taxes. He didn't. That was all separate. Did he make money off of it? Oh, yeah, definitely. But he didn't handle the financial aspects of the business. That's all I meant by that statement. You know, that was left to other people. Don't you think it's kind of a word game you're playing here? Yeah, I do, but that's okay. I want my dad to pardon me, because if he doesn't pardon me, I'm going to tell everybody everything. So what I said that day was a warning shot to my dad. Hey, listen, man, if you don't pardon me, I'm going to tell everybody about your involvement in my business. But as of right now, I'll just play little semantic games and say you weren't financially involved in my business, but we all know you were totally involved in my business and every aspect of my business. And I'm happy to tell everybody that unless you give me checky pardon. Give me the pardon. Raskin said that Hunter Biden's business partner, Eric Schwerin, told him that he was not aware of any involvement by President Biden in the financial conduct of the president's business, president's son's business, but much less any transactions in or out of then Vice President Joe Biden's bank account related to business conducted by any Biden family member. The email disclosures were part of law enforcement records released by House Republicans following the testimony of IRS whistleblower Joseph Ziegler. This month, Ziegler provided the documents to the House Ways and Means Committee in conjunction with a sworn affidavit. The committee, which also heard the testimony of a second IRS whistleblower, Gary Shapley, is led by Jason Smith, Republican of Missouri. Now, Ziegler and Shapley, these guys are good at what they do. I mean, these guys are good. Their job, their whole career has been spent hunting down and unraveling complicated money laundering scams. Complicated money laundering scams. Because these people who do money laundering, these international companies with all their various shell companies and corporations and LLCs and moving money around, they're good. These guys are better. These guys can come in and they can figure all this stuff out, unravel this entire puzzle, and then arrest people and charge them and find those people going to prison. Whether it's the mafia, whether it's some company in Hong Kong that pretends to sell you bourbon but just steals your money. That happened to a friend of mine. Don't buy bourbon from Hong Kong. Buy it from, you know, the United States of America, because let's face it, we make good bourbon here. And I would argue it's got to be from Kentucky, but I don't want to make anybody upset. Texas has some good bourbon too. Hell, even Philly's got good bourbon these days. But my point is that there are all kinds of scams out there. There are all kinds of companies that are just exist just to take your money. These guys are very good at figuring that out. They're also very good about figuring out money laundering and how people move money to wash it from the careful eyes of government and then avoid taxes on it. But you see, these two guys were not allowed to do their job. Gary Shapley and Joseph Ziegler were benched by the Department of Justice and the IRS. They were told, sit down. You two are too good for this. You sit down. Sit down over there. So they went to Congress and they became whistleblowers. And typically whistleblowers are hailed as heroes. They have protections under federal law. They're considered to be brave. They're putting their country ahead of their own personal needs, but not in this case, of course. In this case, they're vilified by the corporate media. They get death threats. They're the worst people on the planet. Now, Ziegler, who knows what he's doing, told Congress that there were multiple emails found with Hunter Biden and his business associates, but the investigative team was unaware at the time that then Vice President Biden used an alias in his private emails. Joe Buckaroo at Yahoo.com, whatever, all those crazy emails that he had. Remember, he had all those different aliases, and I think they accounted for a couple, like 60,000 emails or something crazy like that. Hunter Biden earned nearly $1.2 million from Burisma in 2014, according to emails contained on a copy of the hard drive that the corporate media told you was Russian disinformation, because the government told them it was Russian disinformation. And big tech, since they're part of the unholy triad of government, big tech, and the corporate media, they all said the same thing. And you weren't allowed to know about the laptop or talk about the laptop because it was Russian disinformation. Now that same laptop is literally what they rely on for their news stories, like NBC News, for example. NBC News writes the following. They go, Hunter Biden earned nearly $1.2 million from Burisma in 2014, according to emails contained on a copy of his hard drive and obtained by NBC News. In their recent tax indictment of Biden, federal prosecutors allege that he made over $1.4 million from 2016 to 2019 when Biden's engagement with the Ukrainian firm ended. Biden is scheduled to be arraigned on misdemeanor and felony federal tax charges in Los Angeles in early January. After his indictment last week, Biden's attorney, Abby Lowell, said in a statement, quote, after 5 years of investigating with no new evidence and 2 years after Hunter paid his taxes in full, the United States attorney has piled on 9 new charges when he had agreed just months ago to resolve this matter with a pair of misdemeanors. Well, I understand his point. And the only thing I could say to Abby Lowell is, you're right. That's a big change. That is a dramatic 180. And the reason why it's happening now is because they want the old man out of the race. That's why it's happening now. See, in the summer, things were looking a little bit better for Biden. So they were willing to just kind of make it all go away. And they were just going to lump all this in under that gun diversion agreement and then just, you know, gone. It's over. And that's the end of it. But things have gotten worse for him. And he's a doddering old fool, and he's corrupt, and the economy stinks, and so he's going to lose. So now they want him gone. So yeah, now Hunter's facing all these charges. That's exactly right. Yep. Biden's addition to the Burisma board as head of legal affairs was reported in a news release in 2014. At some point from May of 2014 to December, Burisma allegedly paid a bribe to a Ukrainian official to help stop a joint British-U.S. money laundering investigation into Burisma's top executive, according to a State Department email that quotes a Ukrainian prosecutor. Now, when Joe Biden went there and he said, I want the prosecutor fired, or I'm going to go back home with my $1 billion, And they said, well, call the president. You're not the president. Biden said, call him. Well, son of a gun. Guy was fired. That was Biden because he's a dope confessing that, yes, he, in fact, had the prosecutor who was investigating Burisma fired. And he used our money as the bribe to make it happen. The whole thing is a scam. But the reason why the charges now are coming out is because they want the old man gone. This is the Dana Show. We got a lot more to chat about. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana, coming right back.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As we continue along here on the Dana Show, we got a lot to chat about. It's a busy day for Friday before Christmas, but that's kind of the news cycle these days, isn't it? I remember the old days of talk radio when we would just try on days like today to find something to talk about, but those days are long gone. But in the meantime, I have five things to share with you, so let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
California transit officials say lingering, rotting corpse smell is nothing to be concerned about. Bay Area commuters have been puzzled over a pungent odor that has been in the air for months over a specific area of the BART tracks. It's the Bay Area Rapid Transit System. And according to Reddit posts going back at least 2 months, the smell is detectable in Oakland for a long stretch of the railway. And they've been consulting one another, wanting to know if they also smelled it. People asking each other, you know, and some people wrote back and said, what am I, heart of smelling? They're saying the smell is coming from a rotting corpse, likely belonging to a critter or maybe a body. Others say it's more of a burning or chemical smell. But the mystery goes unsolved, but perhaps for not long. The smell is starting to become the subject of local news articles. And right now, the officials are saying, don't worry about it. We're aware of it, but it poses no threat to riders. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's Jimmy Hoffa's body. Man arrested after his girlfriend falls from a cliff. Turns out he was asking her to marry him. And then she fell off a cliff in Turkey. Well, the thing about it is that she said no. And so he shoved her off the cliff and she died. So now he's under arrest for murder. That's all I got for that. Just a reminder that sometimes those really fun engagement stories can have a very dark, twisted ending to them. A passenger was charged after allegedly vaping and exposing himself and urinating on a Jetstar flight in Australia. That's right. He did all those things. He vaped, exposed himself, and urinated on the flight. The big three. I would just think maybe pick one. You know, pick one. Just either vape, but don't vape and expose. You get the point, right? In Vancouver, a senior fends off a home intruder with a shovel. But what's interesting about this story is that the home intruder was nude. A naked man tried to break into her house with a pointed metal rod. A metal rod. Okay. Vancouver Police Department says it happened just before 9:30 p.m. on Tuesday, December 19th. And the man was swinging the rod at the woman throughout the encounter. She got a shovel that was nearby to protect herself and basically chased him out of the house and cornered him until officers arrived. Thankfully, some astute neighbors heard the commotion. I got to think it's got to be a cop's worst nightmare. Whenever you got to deal with a nude suspect, don't you think? That's got to be the absolute worst. I mean, being a cop is a tough job as it is when criminals have their clothes on. When they don't, oof, it's even worse. And a grenade-like dog poop bag. Wait, a grenade-like dog poop bag dispenser. Okay, let me say that again. Grenade-like dog poop bag dispenser causes a scare at McMinnville Middle School in Oregon. Suspected hand grenade that briefly caused a stir at the middle school was actually a plastic bag dispenser for cleaning up dog poop. The police department said on social media Wednesday that officers responded to a grass field near the middle school's track at 10:35 a.m. for a potential hand grenade on school grounds. Arriving officers secured the area and contacted the Oregon State Police Bomb Squad. The students were okay, they were safe, but it turns out it was just simply a poop dispenser bag or something. Anyway, that's what I got for you right now. I do have other stories to get to, but after that, you might need a little bit of a break. But don't worry. When I get back, it's the economy, stupid. It still is, which explains why Biden's poll numbers are so disastrous for him. And we'll talk about that, as right now the panic is beginning to settle in that it's really, really bad. I'll share with you a thread, a tweet storm by somebody who says Joe Biden's poll numbers are simply unsustainable. It may be the point where people just realize this is a break the glass moment, a true emergency, a true political emergency. We'll talk about it next on The Dana Show. Don't go away.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This guy is John Hayward, his name is. And John Hayward is a writer for Breitbart News. He's got a lot to say. He had a tweet storm, as they call it, a tweet thread, which is pretty devastating for Joe Biden's poll numbers. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. It's the Dana Show, and Dana's off today. It's me, Rich Zeoli, with you. I'm watching right now as illegals are overwhelming the border, overwhelming the southern border. It is absolutely amazing what's happening right now, the invasion of the United States of America. So John Hayward started tweeting out. He said, interesting that Biden's poll numbers keep slipping, even though he's been pretty much invisible for a couple of weeks. Disappearing usually helps him, and it probably helps most politicians these days, at least in small doses. Keeping a low profile for a while allows an unpopular politician to grab some camouflage as the generic candidate. With partisan and ideological loyalty working as it does today, it helps to become the invisible placeholder for your party. Dropping out of sight also takes a little pressure off that last opposition nerve you've been working on. Regular folks, the people who don't live on social media, want to forget about politicians and get back to their daily lives. Biden benefits greatly from getting off the stage because he's such a disaster when he's on the stage. His handlers watch with hearts in their throats, praying that he doesn't say something weird or display signs of his growing physical and mental incapacity. But he's still slipping in what looks like an uncontrollable free fall. The election will not be held tomorrow, but if it was, Trump might win based heavily on irritation with Biden and nostalgia for the better times before he took office. Of course, there's a lot of political ground to cover between now and Election Day. Trump himself has been sort of skirting the national political spotlight, avoiding the debates and doing stuff that stirs up social media, but doesn't create many ripples in the real world. Can voters be induced to forget how angry they are at Biden for his out-of-touch attitude towards rampant inflation, his corruption, which sings even more when people are struggling to make ends meet, and his world-on-fire foreign policy disasters? Sure they can. Trump would almost certainly give the Democrats something to run hard against. I see little evidence that the Republican Party has caught up to the Democrats in harvesting ballots from indifferent voters under new insane election rules. The abortion card might not play quite as well for Democrats as it did in the midterms in 2023, but it's still an issue that combines very well with ballot harvesting to produce significant caches of voters. Did the GOP build a machine to do that with their high voltage issues? He continues, it's interesting that people are not forgetting why they dislike Joe Biden. When he slinks out of sight this time, but under a full court media barrage of abortion, 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 and Trump is the devil, is it give more people time to get used to high prices? Also, hard lefties are ticked off at Biden for not supporting Hamas, and they absolutely will come home in November. They're not going to vote for Trump or any other Republican, and the ballot harvesters will mostly keep them from bolting to third-party protest candidates. Things feel a little different this time around. More people are aware of systemic disasters building in our bloated system. Every cash register checkout reminds them. But the opposition still needs to play a smart game to keep voters focused. Trump's not really one for careful strategic planning, he says, but sometimes he finds what he needs when he's galloping through the China shop. He did it in 2016, blew it in 2020, and might be about to get a third try to grab third rail issues and ride the lightning. One other good thing about Trump, he's an ebullient, confident personality in a time when despair is the left's most reliable weapon. They want you to think things can't get better, that you don't deserve better. Trump doesn't make you feel that way. It's just a big plus. Trump's big minuses are going to light up when he drops out of social media orbit and re-enters the atmosphere of everyday American life. This election could be a simultaneous referendum on both him and Biden. Tough to predict the outcome from here. End of tweet storm. Somebody made the great analogy yesterday that Biden and Trump are sort of like Batman and the Joker. You know, they need each other. Trump will, I think, beat Biden. Biden thinks Trump will lose to him. But another Republican could probably maybe crush Biden because he doesn't have Trump's baggage. Although the one point I'll make about that, because you see poll numbers now that tell you that, yeah, Trump can beat Biden, but, you know, candidate A was Haley, DeSantis, whatever, they crush Biden, right? these candidates have not been exposed yet to the national stage. That's going to change. The minute that they become the party's nominee, if they were to become the party's nominee, I don't think they will. I think Trump's going to be the nominee. But assume that Nikki Haley is able to steal it from Trump. You know, there's a story today that she's catching up to him in New Hampshire. Let's assume, for sake of argument, she's able to catch him and beat him and she becomes the nominee. By the time we get to the fall, they will have destroyed her. I mean, they will have completely unearthed everything about her. They'll paint her as a right-wing fembot who basically is just there to do the bidding of the white man, and they will say she's not really a woman. You know, she doesn't care about women's issues. She wants to ban abortion. I mean, they'll say all those things about her. So by the time you get closer to the general election, those numbers will obviously come down. Trump, on the other hand, though, has been in two national elections. He was president, and people feel how they feel about him. They don't like him or they love him. There's really not much middle ground. But the difference, though, I think, is that there are a lot of people who might say this time around, I don't like the guy. I don't like his tweets. I can't stand him personally, but I really loved the economy under him. And so they may not tell their friends about that, but they may just hold their nose and vote for him because just things were better. How do you express that to a pollster, really? And Trump's loyal base is definitely coming out for him. There's no question about that. Whereas Biden doesn't have a loyal base. Biden's base, which is the kooky left, really most of the Democrat Party, they're angry at him. They don't like him. They think that he's too soft on standing with Hamas, and that he's not, the border's not open enough, that America still is not doing more to destroy fossil fuel and natural gas, that Biden is not doing more to repay college loan debt. The left is not happy. So the question is, do they come out or do they stay home? Now, this is where ballot harvesting gets interesting. There's no question in my mind that the Democrat machine has figured out the early vote system, and they have it down to a science. And there are a lot of Republican voters that still resist. Look, I'm guilty of this. You know, I'm guilty of this. In my heart, I believe everybody should have to vote on election day. And that the only exceptions would be if you are out of the country or you're in the military or you're in the hospital or something like that. That's it. But there are a lot of things I wish. I wish that I could eat pizza every day and not get fat. I wish that I could just stay my age forever. Lots of things I wish. But it doesn't make it true. Let's just take what's happening now in states where you've got early in-person voting. You have drop boxes. You have mail-in ballot with no excuses. And you have some states like Pennsylvania, for example, where the ballot can come in even after election day and they'll count it. And Democrats have seized all those things, and they are using that operation to harvest ballots, literally harvest them. They will go and put ballots in people's hands. They will make sure those ballots are put into a ballot box. The Republican Party is still backwards on this. And a big part of that is because most Republican voters don't like the idea. They believe, like I do, you should vote in person. But it's either adapt or die, as they say. You got to adapt or die. On election night this past go around, I was driving home. It was raining out, and I was running a little bit late. But I don't miss elections, so I still made it. I got there at 5 minutes before the poll closed, polling place closed. But I keep thinking about the fact that there are people out there who are just not as dedicated. And so if they get there and there's traffic or kids sick or something, they might just go home. And unfortunately, that happens a lot. So turnout, even with all the issues that you think would motivate Republican voters this last go around, Republicans still stayed home in a lot of different places. Why is that? You can't give voters, you can't leave anything up to chance. See, the Democrats are smart. They don't leave anything up to chance. They don't leave election day to chance. They know the ballots they need. They get them in people's hands. They get them into drop boxes. They bring people to vote in person. They don't miss a trick. Will the Republican Party be able to match that in 2024? If not, it's going to be a problem. And yes, all of these things are rife for cheating. There's no question about it. You saw the video of that one woman who was a clerk. I forget which state it was. It might have been Rhode Island. I forget. Anyway, she's on camera stuffing the drop boxes. And it's her camera because she's the clerk. So the only reason why anybody got that video is because somebody in the office leaked it. And in Pennsylvania, where the Supreme Court said, listen, a ballot can come in 3 days after the election, no postmark, it's all good. So there's no doubt that the games that they're going to play are huge and that the opportunities for the system to be corrupted are there. That's no excuse, though. You still have to take advantage of the system, and you got to make sure that the system is legit, or as legit as possible. You can't leave these things to chance. But there's another factor in all this too, and that other factor is Biden's health. You know, you think about Joe Biden and the progression that he's been going through now towards his senility. How much worse is Joe Biden going to be by the fall? I got to think Democrats are thinking about this. I got to think they're sitting around right now and they're thinking to themselves, how much worse does he get? These things start to rapidly escalate. And I think we've seen that with Biden. All he needs is one big fall in the fall and break a hip or something like that. And that just confirms what everybody thinks about him. Or he needs just one you know, classic senior moment. It happens to all of us, whether we're seniors or not. But it happens to Biden a lot. And if it happens at the wrong time in a debate or something else, oof, or Biden says something creepy, or Biden says something inappropriate, or sniffs somebody's hair, or touches them. You know, in 2020, they could pretend he was the kind old guy in the basement who was down there staying off Twitter, no mean tweets, hiding out away from COVID, keeping you safe 6 feet away. And he was just going to make America warm and fuzzy and give everybody a big hug. And the Hunter Biden laptop story was Russian disinformation, so he wasn't corrupt. All that is BS now. Everybody knows the truth about the guy. He's a nasty SOB. He's corrupt as hell. And he says really inappropriate, creepy things. And he's losing his friggin' mind. So all of these factors together make you turn around and go, I got a problem with this guy. I think this guy might be bad news. The other thing, too, is that in 2020, when the Hunter Biden laptop came out, the reason why the corporate media, big tech, and the government, the unholy triad, all work together to keep you from knowing the truth about it is not because of Hunter Biden's nudie pics. Yeah, there were a lot of disgusting pics on that laptop, a lot of disgusting videos, and him doing a whole lot of cocaine with disgusting people, but that's not why they hid it. They hid it because it was all the financial crimes of Joe Biden. All the financial crimes of Joe Biden that came out on that laptop. And it connects directly to him. And so the image of him being this saintly old man in his basement, hiding out from the evil pandemic and Trump's mean tweets would have just completely vanished like that. And people would have said, this guy can be corrupted by our enemies. China, Ukraine, Russia, Romania. Don't forget Romania. I know they may be the lesser of the corrupt countries, but they're still corrupt. Can't do that now. That's all out there. All of it's out there, and more of it's going to come out. So I gotta think, if I'm a Democrat, I'm sitting back there and I'm going to myself, this guy's going to get worse. Even if the economy gets better, he's still going to get worse. So what's it going to be like if he debates Trump in the fall? Trump's going to clean his clock, and it's not going to be pretty. And this is the problem Democrats have. But the advantage they have, though, is that they're very good at ballot harvesting. And the party will come home, if nothing else, just to stop Trump. And they'll make sure all those votes are counted. Sometimes more than once. This is The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana on a busy Friday pre-Christmas edition. By the way, you can follow along on Twitter. Keep the conversation going at Rich Zeoli, R-I-C-H-Z-E-O-L-I. More than a dozen states are now challenging Donald Trump to be on the ballot. Don't go away.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Oh, this Florida man set fire to his own house during a four-hour standoff over shoplifted cigarettes. In Deltona, Florida, the resident also grazed a deputy with a bullet, but thank God the deputy will be okay. A deputy in Florida was grazed by a bullet Wednesday during a gunfight with a suspect who fled after being suspected of shoplifting cigarettes and then took part in an hours-long standoff before he was taken into custody. The deputy who was shot had non-life-threatening injuries, thank God. And this is according to Fox News here. The suspect was taken into custody Wednesday morning following a four-hour standoff during which he set fire to his house, which is located about 30 minutes northeast of Orlando. A worker at a convenience store called deputies after witnessing the suspect stealing cigarettes. The suspect drove at deputies arriving at the store and then attempted to flee, but was hindered by shopsticks a deputy had employed. The suspect was able to drive to his home on a deflated tire, followed by deputies who commanded him to get out of his truck. When deputies approached the vehicle in an attempt to remove him, the suspect fired at them. The suspect then said fire to the cab of the truck and was forced into his home, where a short time later, deputies saw smoke and flames coming from the upper floor. When the suspect was spotted on a balcony, deputies used an armored vehicle to knock down the balcony and bring the suspect to the ground. The suspect was treated at the scene for unspecific injuries and taken to the hospital. And hopefully he will be he will be. I mean, that dude's got some problems. An armed Florida man was accused of trying to enter a military base as Captain America. I love Captain America. He's one of my favorite superheroes, by the way. A Florida man was indicted Tuesday after trying to enter an Air Force base in Tampa last month. In a release, investigators say Baruch Roche II, 33 years old, attempted to enter MacDill Air Force Base in his car before being stopped by security personnel at the base gate. He refused to provide an identification, instead calling himself Captain America and demanding entry, claiming that he had a meeting with a general to provide top secret information. The U.S. Attorney's Office explained he then became argumentative and threatened to return daily to look for the officers denying him entry. According to the release, he was detained as security personnel searched his car, finding an AR-15 rifle and 5 magazines loaded with 125 rounds of ammunition. He was taken into custody and charged with attempted possession of a firearm in a federal facility, and also impersonating a superhero, which might be a federal offense. I'm not quite sure. Too bad he didn't have Cap's shield. He could have just, you know, that shield is pretty amazing. Anyway, speaking of movies that stink, everything Marvel has done that since Disney took over in this latest couple phases has been terrible. I like to watch those movies with my kid, my son, and we're really big in the early ones. And then everything that Disney has been putting out lately has been a steaming pile of garbage. I didn't even go see the last one. The reviews were so bad. But it kind of goes to what I said earlier about Hollywood. They are hemorrhaging. And I think a big part of the reason why they're hemorrhaging is a lot of the stuff they're putting out is just not good. You know what I mean? It's just not good quality. So there's definitely a problem going on. But it's a shame because those Marvel movies, those superhero movies back in the day, they were great. The whole first four phases, some of my absolute favorites, culminating with Avengers Endgame. That movie was fantastic. Anyway, in the third hour of the Dana Show, and it's the economy, stupid. Let's talk about the economy, no question about it. Plus, what is going to happen with Israel and the never-ending attempts by Hamas to eradicate them? Don't go away.
But by the way, the new Corvette is coming out electric. 0 to 60, 2.9 seconds.
You gonna drive that one?
I'm going to give it a shot.
The creepy whispers back. Welcome back to the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana today. Happy Friday. Yeah, that's when Biden does that creepy whisper, you know. I'm upstairs. I'm in the house. It always sounds like a serial killer to me. He really does. Like creepy 50s horror movie. I'm upstairs. What are you wearing? So creepy. Anyway, Biden's administration today announced another attempt to kill American energy independence. The White House has unveiled strict hydrogen regulations in a victory for environmental kooks. Guidance will stunt the growth of a critical industry before it has ever even begun. Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska, the White House unveiled highly anticipated guidance, placing significant restrictions on the type of hydrogen power that will be eligible for generous federal tax credits. The proposed guidance released Friday morning in a joint announcement by the White House, Treasury Department, and Department of Energy tethers the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act's highest production credit of $3 per kilogram of hydrogen produced to tight green energy standards. The restrictions have been supported by environmentalists and some green energy companies, but opposed by business and clean power industry groups. Because hydrogen is amazing. And hydrogen would absolutely be a win for energy, a win for the environment, a win all around. But it's not renewable. You see, you got to realize that the left, the climate kooks, all they care about is what is so-called renewable energy, wind, solar, and water. That's it. They don't want anything else. They're not reasonable people. They don't want nuclear. They don't want hydrogen. They don't want natural gas. Nothing. It's not. It doesn't matter if natural gas is clean burning. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if hydrogen is completely clean. It doesn't matter. They only insist on so-called renewables. That's why they want to build these massive wind turbines up and down the entire East Coast, which are killing whales and dolphins and killing birds and destroying sight lines, destroying the coast, but they don't care. They're obsessed with this stuff. It's why they want to have all these solar panels that are made in China. It's why they keep having these kids, these slave mines for these cobalt batteries. You know, these kids are doing all this. I mean, it's terrible. And they don't want it done in the United States of America, as they mandate everybody has to have a electric car. And hydrogen is a no-brainer. I mean, it really is a no-brainer in terms of energy and what the United States could do and provide. It's scientific. It's absolutely safe. And yet, it's not renewable. So therefore, they're against it. That's it. They're just against it. John Podesta, President Biden's clean energy czar, said, quote, "The Inflation Reduction Act's hydrogen tax credit will help build a clean hydrogen industry that will be critical in reducing emissions from harder to decarbonize sectors like heavy industry and heavy transportation." Jennifer Granholm, the Secretary of Energy, said, "Today's announcement will further unprecedented investments in a new American-led industry as we aim to lead and propel the global clean energy transition. Hydrogen has the potential to clean up America's manufacturing industry, power the transportation sector, and shore up our energy security, all while delivering good-paying jobs and new economic opportunity to communities in every pocket of America." So what's the problem? Well, hydrogen has been widely pegged as a key technology for reducing future greenhouse gas emissions, especially in hard-to-decarbonize sectors like shipping, heavy trucking, cement, steel manufacturing. The transportation and industrial sectors account for nearly 60% of its use, 60% of United States and use emissions. Overall, the hydrogen production tax credits are some of the most generous clean energy incentives earmarked under the Inflation Reduction Act. But the formulation of tax credits has sparked an intense debate in recent months. And the problem is that the credits will be available for 10 years, starting on the date a hydrogen production facility is placed into service for projects that begin construction before 2023. The Clean Hydrogen Production Credit aims to make production of clean hydrogen with minimal climate pollution more economically competitive and accelerate development. But now critics are pointing out, and this is the key thing, the proposed rules represent a major milestone and will eventually kill the industry before it even gets off the ground. Because in addition to the tax credits, the Biden administration came out and unveiled all kinds of sweeping regulations on top of the hydrogen industry. So they're hiding this by going, look, we have tax credits for you. But then when you peel back the layers of the onion, you find out there's all kinds of regulations built in to basically kill the industry. The proposal is facing significant pushback from industry groups and hydrogen companies that have argued that the federal government, in order to begin the implementation of the tax credits, will in turn require regulations that are devastating. Groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Fuel Cell and Hydrogen Energy Association, and the Clean Hydrogen Future Coalition, in addition to hydropower and nuclear groups, have argued strict regulations like those unveiled today will deter investment, increase the cost of hydrogen, lead to fewer projects in the coming years, and discriminate against existing low-carbon power sources. Quote from the president and CEO of the Fuel Cell and Hydrogen Energy Association, "The guidance announced today by the Biden-Harris administration will place unnecessary burdens on the still nascent clean hydrogen industry. The nation needs common sense solutions for this tax credit that are aligned with the congressional intent to spur robust economic development and create jobs while reducing carbon emissions." Said Congress intended the tax credits to spur domestic clean hydrogen production and allow the United States to maintain an internal competitive advantage, not to be an inadvertent backdoor to regulate use of the electricity grid. But of course, that's how the Biden administration works, right? They want to satisfy the base. The environmental kooks want nothing but renewable. So they'll turn around and they'll say, hey, tax credits, look. But in order to get them, you got to agree to regulations. And these regulations will destroy your industry, making the tax credits useless. But nevertheless, am I right? Tax credits, woohoo. And anybody with a brain looks at this and goes, why are you doing this? I mean, this could be great for international use as well. The United States could be a leader, an international leader in hydrogen power. You know, right now, Vladimir Putin, for example, as we keep sending all this money to Ukraine, no strings attached, forever and ever and ever, while our border's wide open, Vladimir Putin is selling his natural gas at record levels to countries like France, Sweden, and Spain. Now, France That's an interesting one, right? Because we keep hearing that if Putin defeats Ukraine and wins that war, he's going to then march into Europe, just like Hitler, and take over Europe. We keep hearing this all the time. So it's either stop him now or you're going to have to fight in Europe. Now, France is very familiar with what it was like to fall to the Nazis. When the Nazis were goose-stepping through the Champs-Élysées and all the Nazi banners were flying, you would think France, of all countries, would be acutely aware of what that threat is like. So then why does France keep buying Vladimir Putin's natural gas? Well, for two reasons. Number one, they don't believe the hype. And number two, they need it. Same thing with Spain. Same thing with Sweden. So Putin's getting rich selling natural gas because the United States of America will not harness what we have. We could build a huge liquid natural gas export facility right outside of Philadelphia to serve the entire world. But we won't do it. Because the left hates natural gas. Even though natural gas is clean burning, they don't care. It's not renewable, therefore we hate it. That's their mindset, and there's no negotiating with them. So now you have the United States looking to achieve energy independence and also looking to achieve a clean environment. And as the industry said, the United States cannot achieve its climate goals without clean hydrogen. And these proposed regulations and requirements will unnecessarily hold back our domestic industry, driving investment, manufacturing, and technology leadership overseas. Marty Durbin, the president of the United States Chamber of Commerce Global Energy Institute, said the guidance will stunt the growth of a critical industry before it has even begun. Andy Marsh, the CEO of hydrogen fuel cell systems developer Plug Power, said this framework will fall woefully short in achieving the administration's decarbonization objectives. Meanwhile, the guidance is likely to also to face congressional opposition, including from several Senate Democrats who have argued that the Inflation Reduction Act was designed to allow for a slow phase-in of stringent guidance. But you know the problem, though, is that whenever a new technology comes around that the United States of America says we don't want because it's not renewable, then that means that some other international actor is going to take it up. And then they're going to invest in it and they're going to crush us and make us eat our lunch. The best irony of COP28. So COP28 was the climate summit where they all went. You know, they took their private jets. And then when they were there, they were chauffeured around in big SUVs that, of course, were not electric. They did have electric cars there, though. But the best part about that is that the electric cars would hook up into the grid in Dubai. The grid in Dubai is completely powered by oil. That's right. Dubai is an oil-rich country, and they're so invested in oil. And this is my favorite part of the story. They are actually building new islands to further their exploration for oil drilling. Yes, they're not even just stopping at what they have. They're building new islands so they can do more offshore drilling. They're all in on oil. And Dubai, their philosophy is, when the rest of you idiots around the world deplete all your resources, you're going to need us. And we'll be here to help you. But of course, like anything else, you're going to have to wet my beak. You know what I mean? It's going to be a little extra vig on that. Sure, we'll supply oil to you, but it's going to cost you because you were idiots and you depleted your reserves. And you would not further drill. You would not further explore. In fact, you kept making all these areas, designate them as lands you cannot drill. No more exploration. Anwar, offshore, over, done. Biden administration fighting every step of the way to not allow people to get drilling permits. Period. Period. So Dubai hosts the climate summit, and this was great. They open up their doors. They say, come on in. We love the green revolution. We're all in. Yay. And meanwhile, everything about the United Arab Emirates is entirely about oil. Everything. So they had their disposable straws, you know, the kind that melt into water, a straw that just literally just, you know, breaks down into water because that's healthy, right? And I'm sure they had all kinds of recycled paper napkins. This napkin was made with 100% post-consumer waste. I'm sure they had all that at the Dubai hotels and all the fancy bars and restaurants. And when all the rich people from around the world came in on their yachts and their jets and then were shuttled around in big SUVs, it all looked the part. And everybody said, pay no attention to the oil drilling going on right over here. The United States has a chance to lead the world in all of these areas and provide our own energy security, but we don't want to do it because we're led by a bunch of lunatics who worship at the altar of renewable energy. So even when you have something that is clean and scientific, something that would help the entire world, like hydrogen, the left says no, because they are freaking crazy. This is The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'll tell you what, there's a lot going on in the Middle East. I got to get into that, too. The Iranian-backed Houthis are firing at our ships now. This is just insane. But I got five things for you here on The Dana Show, so let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Yeah, you know, the thing about happiness, the secret to a happy life, it's not that complicated. But one of the main things that I don't do well is get enough sleep. And that's because I have three kids, including a three-year-old. And when they're sick, nights can be very, very long. But the secret to a happy life might be sleep. Going to bed just 1 hour later than usual is enough to make you miserable, according to a study. They looked at 154 studies that span more than 50 years, and staying up late could make you feel less enthusiastic about life the next day, even if you lose only an hour of sleep. Now, for me, on the weekends, I tend to stay up very late and watch movies. And then by Monday, I'm shot. So just keep that in mind. Sleep is actually critical. How much you need, though, that kind of depends on you. But they say consistency is really the key to all of this. But maybe what will make you happy is money. Lots and lots of money. Powerball's jackpot climbs to $620 million ahead of Saturday's drawing. $620 million coming up for this Saturday. Good luck. That would be a nice little Christmas present. You might be able to pay off even some of your Christmas debt with that money if you win. This is from the Irish Sun. Mystery is a pair of human legs with socks and shoes still on are found in a container shipped 8,000 miles from the United States to Thailand. Oof. And a second limb was compressed in a cardboard box. This kind of sounds like something out of Dexter, but factory workers were horrified when they opened up a container to find a pair of rotten human legs inside, still wearing socks and sneakers. Recycling plant employees were opening up a shipment of cardboard from the U.S. when they made the grim discovery. The police are now liaisoning with U.S. authorities as fears spread that the owner of the body parts may have been murdered, you think, before being hidden in the case and taken across the Pacific. The police department says it did not happen in our country, though. They think it happened in the United States, and they only discovered it in their country. Again, who knows? Maybe it's Jimmy Hoffa. A diaper loaded with 9mm bullets was discovered in a traveler's carry-on at LaGuardia Airport in New York. TSA officers notified the Port Authority police, who cited the unidentified man with unlawful possession of ammo in a diaper. I think it was a clean diaper, but I'm not 100% sure. They found 17 9mm bullets artfully concealed in an otherwise clean disposable diaper bag. Well, let's hope so, because if it was in a dirty diaper, that would just be disgusting for the TSA, for everybody, right? And speaking of guns, a federal judge has blocked a California law that would have banned carrying firearms in most public places. This is what the left does. New Jersey did the same thing. After the Supreme Court ruled that you cannot deprive people of their constitutional right to carry a firearm outside the home, the states then made it so incredibly cumbersome that you almost decide it's not workable. You can't do it. And of course, Gavin Newsom, being one of those people, he signed a law that would have prohibited people from carrying concealed guns in 26 places, including public parks and playgrounds, churches, banks, and zoos. And the problem, of course, is that many people need to protect themselves and their family at all of those places. So at least for the time being, a federal judge has blocked that law, which is good news for the Second Amendment. But stay tuned for that. Coming up, Iran, their backed Houthi terrorists are at it again. What will the United States do? Let's talk about it here on The Dana Show. Don't go away.
Tired of the same old predictable commentary? Spice up your day with a Dana Show podcast, where dynamic discussions, compelling guests, and Dana's unique perspective await. Download on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got to stop it, and Republicans need to hold the line here against the White House.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you said about Mike Johnson. He is correct. We need to hold the line. We should not have a single dollar going to Ukraine at all until the southern border of the United States is secure. And importantly, why would we go fund the Department of Homeland Security on February 2nd without demanding changes from this right. administration?
That was Congressman Chip Roy. He's exactly right. I agree with him 100%. Welcome back to The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, with you this afternoon. Back with you again on January 2nd. Hope you have a wonderful Christmas and Happy New Year. He's right. Why Republicans are falling into this trap by Democrats to talk about immigration, our immigration system. No. The border needs to be secure, period. Not another penny should go. Not another penny should go to Ukraine. No, not until the border is secure. That is what needs to happen. So Nikki Haley is now within striking distance of Trump, apparently in New Hampshire, according to some latest polls that are coming out. We'll see. I mean, we'll see if that holds. This is an Iowa voter urging Nikki Haley to agree that Trump is this cut number two. Cut two, Steve.
Well, I want to support you. I also want to hear from you that you also think there's a danger here, because this is not good for our country and it's not good for the church. And I want to be able to support someone who agrees with that.
I wouldn't be running if I didn't think that he's not the right person at the right time. I have said multiple times, I don't think it's good for the country for Donald Trump to become president again. I've made that very clear.
You know, the question was, Trump is a danger, and she doesn't want to say that, and she's smart not to say that. She really is. She's smart. I don't know if this is going to hold, but obviously the Republican establishment is solidly behind Nikki Haley right now, as Governor Ron DeSantis has clearly peaked with his poll numbers, and they're starting to come down. So now the establishment has decided a couple months ago to switch horses midstream and to go from backing DeSantis to now Haley to try to stop Trump. There's rumors about DeSantis, and I don't know how true they are, but if in fact he doesn't stay in the race, then what would happen at that point is you'd see Chris Christie also get out and probably back Nikki Haley, and it would be Haley versus Ramaswamy. And Ramaswamy's really there to try to help Trump. I mean, honestly, he really is. But this is what he said to an Iowa voter when he was asked about Trump. Cut number one.
I think I will stand for those values with more moral authority, I guess I would say. I want you to be able to look. Are these your kids?
Yeah.
I'm a father of two sons, too, and we raised them the same way. I want you to be able to look them in the eye and tell them that I want you to grow up and be like him. And I want you to be able to say that in good conscience without having to wince or hedge or stutter as you say it. And hold me to a higher standard than you held Trump.
Speaking of Trump, by the way, there's some breaking news that the United States Supreme Court has rejected an appeal from the special counsel Jack Smith to expedite the Trump immunity case. Jack Smith was hoping to get this trial going by Super Tuesday. That's his big goal here. He wants to get the trial going by Super Tuesday, hoping that it will lead to Republican voters turning around and saying, we can't have Trump. That's his goal as special counsel. It's probably not going to happen now, because the question of whether or not Trump as president has immunity to the things that went on that Jack Smith is charging him with, that question before the Supreme Court is not going to be resolved anytime soon. So the special counsel was trying to rush this appeal, get the Supreme Court to make a quick hearing so that he could expedite the case. And that's not going to happen. So that's bad news for the special counsel. That's a setback for him, which is good, because he doesn't deserve to have any more help. I told you yesterday, he's not even a proper special counsel. He shouldn't be the special counsel. His appointment is unconstitutional. He's just a private citizen who is plucked out of thin air and put into this position. That's not how the statute was set up, and it's not what he should be doing. But now that this Supreme Court has rejected this, Jack Smith is now going to have to wait on their timeline. The special counsel is going to have to wait on their timeline. And the court's timeline, anybody's guess. But that's not helpful to him, because he wanted this on camera. Oh, he wanted this big hearing on camera, the trial of the century, the trial against Donald Trump. And now poor little Jack Smith has to wait. And Trump may not be on trial by Super Tuesday. In fact, he might already be the Republican nominee before the trial even starts. It's possible he might be president before the trial even starts, if he wins, obviously. It's possible. And that is really Jack Smith's big fear, is it not? That he won't be able to try Trump in court until Trump is elected president, in which case then, of course, Trump's going to pardon himself, as he should, and make it all go away. and fire Jack Smith and fire the attorney general and fire everybody. You're fired. That's what's going to happen. There's a whole lot of obstacles to getting Donald Trump in that courtroom with Jack Smith. A whole lot of obstacles, including obviously one of the biggest ones, which was raised by Colorado, which is whether or not Trump should not be on the ballot. Because if the Supreme Court decides to hear that first, they may punt on this idea of hearing an expedited Trump immunity case. They rejected the appeal from the special counsel to expedite that case. The Supreme Court of the United States may say, listen, we got to put that in the back burner. We got to deal first with this question of ballot access, which the court has not even said anything yet. The Supreme Court has not said a word regarding what Colorado did. So you got to wonder then, this may throw off Jack Smith's timeline well into the summer, possibly. He was really hoping to get this in court by Super Tuesday, which is March. That seems highly unlikely right now. The Supreme Court on Friday decided not to intervene in former President Donald Trump's criminal case for now, saying it would not decide a key issue of whether he is broadly immune for actions he took challenging the 2020 election. The High Court denied without comment Special Counsel Jack Smith's request, asking the justices to step over the typical appeals court process and quickly decide the legal question, which is core to Trump's criminal prosecution in Washington, D.C., over allegations of conspiring to upend President Joe Biden's victory. Now, that means that, as far as I understand it, then the circuit court process is going to have to follow through. That's going to take some time. That's going to take some time. That is not going to be something they're able to wrap up very, very quickly. I'll tell you, if you were to look at it, it's going to be a three-judge panel at the D.C. Circuit, and then they're going to do what's called an en banc hearing, and then it'll go to the Supreme Court after that. That could be months from now. I mean, that could be months. This could essentially now derail the investigation entirely, because Jonathan Turley was pointing out in Fox News a short time ago, there's kind of this unwritten rule in the Department of Justice where you're not going to have a case within a certain window of an election if somebody's on the ballot. And it's not really etched in stone, but they may say if it gets too close to the election and then Trump's the nominee, they're going to have to wait till after the election. I mean, this is a serious setback here for him. Not only is he not going to get Trump in a courtroom by March, he may not get him in a courtroom before the election. Because now, if you go through the D.C. Circuit Court and you go through this process of the immunity, that's going to be that there's going to be a trial there. Then they have to have time to render their judgment. And then there's the appeals process to the United States Supreme Court. And that could take months. Meaning that by the time that's all wrapped up and the question of whether or not Trump is immune is answered, and let's say they say he's not, he doesn't have immunity, and he can be held liable for these in criminal court, by then he might be the president-elect. Or he might be the Republican nominee, and it might be the fall, in which case then a judge is going to say, this has to wait till after the election. It's not, we can't have a trial here when this man is a Republican nominee for president of the United States and expect that he can have the ability to have a proper defense. And that's what a judge should say. We don't know how a judge is going to say, but obviously that's what a judge should say. I mean, this is a serious handicap, which would prevent him from you listen, if you're charged with a crime where you could go and spend the rest of your life in prison, you got to give it your all. You can't go in, you know, with one hand tied behind your back here. So in that case, then, if you're the Republican nominee for president and you got to be on the campaign trail, you're not a primary candidate. You're the nominee. You're the party's nominee in our two-party system. You're the nominee. And for a court to say you got to get off the campaign trail and be in the courtroom, I mean, you don't have to be, but you really should be because you're on trial here. That would be a major blow, not only to the candidate, but to the entire Republican Party. So you'd have the entire Republican Party going after this judge and saying, peacefully, I don't mean, you know, you got to be careful these days with your language, right? Going after the judge and saying, you can't have a trial here. You got to wait. And most likely that's what would happen. And then assuming Trump wins, well, then all this goes away. This is a very, very bad day for Jack Smith, the special counsel, because by rejecting this appeal to fast track this to the Supreme Court, they turned back and said, You go through the circuit court. You go through the normal rigmarole here. You get no special little rush here. You go back and do the process the right way. That could take months for the special counsel. This may have just been the end of the trial against Donald Trump. This may be the end of it. This may be the end of it, because by doing this right now in this manner, you have just kicked the ball so down the field that there's no way he can try him before the, I don't think there's a way he can try him before the general election. I don't think there is. I mean, talk about getting a bad Christmas present if you're the special counsel, huh? Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. Remember that from Home Alone? You filthy animal. Keep the change, you filthy animal. Petition for a writ of cert before judgment denied in all caps. Just came out from the Supreme Court just a few moments ago. Wow, some big breaking news here. Big breaking news on the Dana Show. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll get into more detail on this with you as details are coming out. We're almost to the end of the show, but I love the fact that at least I can bring this to you before we sign off here on the Dana Show. The key, though, if you're just joining me, the key here is that the United States Supreme Court has said we are not going to accept your writ of cert. We're denying your writ of cert to hear this case expedited, to bypass the D.C. Circuit and to hear the case directly about whether or not, as president of the United States, Donald Trump has immunity from the charges you're leveling against him, because those charges have to do with when he was president of the United States of America. We'll be right back.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So breaking news here, the United States Supreme Court will not expedite Trump's immunity claims. This case, the special counsel Jack Smith wanted the court to expedite this and hear it, bypass the D.C. Circuit Court, and make a ruling on whether or not the president of the United States, as he was at the time, would have immunity for the charges that Jack Smith is throwing his way. And the request from the special counsel for the Supreme Court to hear that was denied. The writ of cert, as they say, was denied. And so now the Supreme Court is saying you'll have to go through the D.C. Circuit Court, where you're going to have a trial. You're going to have a hearing, and they're going to have to make a determination on whether or not the president at the time was immune from the claims you are throwing at him now as a private citizen. And whatever that ruling is most likely going to be appealed. I mean, if the court comes back and says Trump was immune, well, then the special counsel is going to appeal it. If the court comes back and says Trump does not have immunity as president at the time, well, then Trump's going to appeal it. I mean, either way, it's coming back to the Supreme Court. So now what this means is that from a timing perspective, the special counsel Jack Smith was hoping to get Donald Trump in a courtroom on camera, potentially, by March, right ahead of Super Tuesday. And the thinking was is that the nation would see him on trial for all these crimes related to January 6th and election denial and election interference and blah, blah, blah. And that the Republican Party would say, we're choosing somebody else. Well, that's gone. That's over. That March deadline is gone. Forget that. That's over now. At best, maybe you're looking at the summer, but probably not, because ultimately, if this gets too close to the election, the Supreme Court's just going to wait, because they're not going to make a decision if it's too close to an election. It wouldn't be fair to Trump's due process. I mean, whether you love the guy, hate the guy, he's still a person accused of a crime. And in this country, if you're accused of a crime, you get due process. And part of that due process is you have to have every advantage when the government's coming after you. So talk about a major disadvantage. If he wins the nomination, if he's the party's nominee in June, at the convention or July, whenever it is, then at that point, you try to get him in a courtroom in August or September, that close to the general election, that's going to be just considered to be profoundly unfair and a violation of his due process. So with that question hanging out there, and then don't forget, you still have Georgia, you still have New York, that fraud case in New York, you have the Georgia case, you have potentially now the classified documents issue. So all of these things now that are out there in the legal orbit, as this gets closer and closer to the time when Trump would become the Republican nominee, and if he is the Republican nominee, or it looks like he's going to be, if he's the presumptive nominee, That's going to have a big impact on the court timeline here. So this is a bad day for Jack Smith, a bad day for the special counsel. He was hoping and hoping that Trump would be in court on TV every night going on about how he undermined democracy, tried to overthrow America, blah, 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 and do it before Super Tuesday. Have the Republicans pick somebody else. Ain't gonna happen. Not now. Not now. This is the worst news the special counsel could get on a Friday before Christmas. I mean, the Supreme Court just wrecked his entire weekend. They just wrecked Jack Smith's entire Christmas weekend and probably New Year's too. But hopefully this show today did not wreck yours. And I hope you have a wonderful, very, very Merry Christmas and a wonderful Happy New Year. 2024 is going to be one of the most exciting political years of our entire history. I mean that. It is going to be epic. Because how can it not be? I mean, this is something out of a novel. All these court cases, all this palace intrigue, the innuendo, waiting on this court ruling, whether he'll be on the ballot, appeals, challenges. Oh, man. We haven't even gotten to the first primary or caucus yet. So stay tuned. It's going to be something. All right, Steve, what do you got for me in the world of stupid audio?
I don't know what's going on yesterday, but I think Oprah had an event. They were celebrating something for her, and a reporter slipped this quick question in, so let's see how she answers.
Oprah, are you supporting the president again in 2024?
I'm just here to celebrate this event. I'm just here to celebrate this
so
event.
Wonderful.
And how does this compare to your other accomplishments in your career?
Well, this is one I never even imagined, you know? This is what I never even imagined.
She didn't really answer the question, Steve, did she? Doesn't sound like it.
We'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, sounds like she dodged it. All right. Well, I guess that says a lot right there, since she's best buds with Barack Obama. And Barack Obama's other best bud, David Axelrod, was the one who did that big tweet storm saying Joe Biden can't win and Joe Biden's got to be out of the race. You remember that? Joe Biden's got to go. Mm-hmm. That was Axelrod. That was the axe, the guy behind Biden's, Obama's big victory. So I guess Oprah doesn't want to say anything either. Very, very awkward, huh? All right, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. My name is Rich Zeoli. It's been an honor and a pleasure to fill in for Dana. I'll see you after the new year. Stay safe.